Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, everyone. Welcome. It's Dr. Terry. Thank you so much for listening. I have another great show for you today. Today's show is all about bridging the generational divide in the workplace. Now, research shows that millennials now make up the largest percentage of the workforce, but their confidence and technological experience have created extreme conflict between the older and younger generations in the workforce. So today, we're going to discuss the generational divide in the workplace and what to do about it. My guest today is Kelly Riggs. He is an author, speaker, and has over two decades of executive management and training experience. He is a corporate consultant specializing in strategic transformation initiatives and driving successful change in companies. He's also the author of a new book called Counter Mentor Leadership: How to Unlock the Potential of the Four-Generation Workplace. The book offers practical, actionable advice that improves workplace culture and helps organizations to bridge the generational divide. And if you want to learn more about Kelly or the book, go to countermentors.com. So welcome to the program, Kelly. Great to have you with us today.
Absolutely a pleasure to join you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure as well. Now, before we get started on the topic, you wrote the book with your son, Robbie Riggs. How was it writing the book together? And was this your first project together, or have you been working together for a long period of time?
Well, this is actually our first major project together. I have written books in the past on my own. The first book that I've co-authored, and it was really a fantastic experience to co-write this book with my son, Robbie. He's a 31-year-old millennial. I'm a 50-something boomer. And, you know, he grew up with me in an entrepreneurial household. He interned with my company, which I started a solopreneur company 20 years ago, or 12 years ago, rather, this particular company. And and as he got out into the workplace, we found that our relationship began to change over time. It, you know, it started out as a traditional father, son, or, you know, boss, employee kind of thing. Dad, I need advice. Tell me about this. What's going on? But more and more, as he gained his experience and confidence in the workplace, I began to ask him questions about his generation and tools and ideas and tactics and the things he was learning in big consulting, which is what he did when he first came out of college. So it was our first major project.
I love that because, you know, the parent-child relationship changes over time as our kids. I'm also a baby boomer and I have millennial kids, and it changes our relationship when they get out and gain that confidence. So what did you do, Kelly, then? Just wake up one morning and say, hey, son, let's write a book together? Or how did that come about?
That's a great question. You know, when I first started doing what I'm doing a dozen years ago, some of the first calls that I've got in terms of dealing with leadership teams, executive teams, was, listen, can you come in and help us with these millennials? Oh, my gosh, what a train wreck. And I would say, well, absolutely we can, but I don't need to talk to the millennials. I need to talk to you, because this is not a generational problem. It's a relational problem. And leadership is about relationships. It's not about generations. Every new generation brings something different to the party, and every older generation struggles with the challenges that they present. So as we began to talk, he was encountering the same kinds of problems that I encountered, but from the totally opposite perspective. And more we began to talk about, and we saw the solutions as the same, but from completely different perspectives. And so we started a podcast, believe it or not, a video podcast, and we get a little sarcastic and a little snarky, and we have a good time with it. And over the course of time, we had developed a methodology for training executive teams how to deal with the challenges of bridging the generational gap. And that eventually led us to the idea to create a book.
Oh, I just love it. So, do you agree on everything as you go forward, or you have some disagreements? Because you said your podcast, you're a little snarky. I'm assuming that's because you as a boomer and him as a millennial don't agree on everything.
Well, to be fair, I mean, we do try to play the caricature roles on occasion. And, you know, we'll make fun of each other and kind of throw out the stereotypical stuff. But the reality is, on the big principles, we absolutely see eye to eye. I don't think that's a surprise, frankly, except that what's interesting is that when we work together, it allows our clients to hear from both the boomer and the millennial perspective. And those perspectives are completely different in a lot of ways. You know, he grew up in a much more collaborative environment. They studied different in college than we did in college. We went to the library. You know, they go to Starbucks and have access to more information than we ever did.
And they don't do those face-to-face kind of learning opportunities. It's online and it's, you know, searching things up on Google. So what you're saying, because I'm very interested in the differences, Kelly, is that the first difference is that one uses technology different. Is that what the first difference is between boomer and millennial?
I think it's twofold, Terry. When you really drill down into it, not only is technology a big differentiator, you know, the newest generation, the youngest of the kids, they were completely weaned on technology. I mean, they came out of the womb tweeting about the experience, you know, whereas we boomers, we're not as interested in taking pictures of our food and, you know, documenting every single thing that happens in our life. So technology has everything to do with that. But here's the other piece. They were also raised quite a bit differently. And there's so many areas in which we see that acted out in the workplace where it's just a completely different worldview and background that leads to some real conflict and confrontations inside the workplace.
Well, give listeners an example so we really understand what you're saying. How were they raised differently? And then how does it come into the workplace?
Well, here's one of the most vivid examples that you'll see over and over, and that is, both boomer and millennial value respect, but the boomer, we grew up being told that you will respect authority and title and position. So the policeman, the fireman, the coach, the teacher, these were people that we automatically afforded our respect regardless of who they might be or whatever. Millennials weren't raised that way. They were raised that you get respect when you earn it. So I don't care if you're a policeman or a teacher or whatever. If I think you're a bad teacher or if you don't treat me appropriately, then I won't respect you regardless of what your authority or title may be. That makes for some real combustible scenarios inside the workplace because I'm a boomer boss. I offer a millennial a position and I've interviewed them. I value their contribution. We offer them a job, bring them in, pay them a wage. But they don't respect me until I quote unquote earn it. And that makes boomers crazy. You know, what we counsel people to do is listen, these are the kinds of conversations you need to have before you ever offer someone a job. There's going to be some differences. Let's align our expectations so that we can get on the same page. As you well know, I mean, conflict is nothing more than frustrated expectations. So I expect to be respected. And you expect to respect me when I earn it, that can create some real significant problems.
That's fascinating. And you're right. I mean, when you do have conflict, it's just frustration because we're not meeting each other's expectations. So I'm also a university professor, though, Kelly. And I tell millennials that I teach, you need to respect your elders or you need to refer to them not by their first name or hey in an email, but you use doctor or mister. Right. And they do. And then, you know, for me as a professor, when somebody says a student says, hey, I just cringe. So I always say, you know, they need to change. So is that what you would support as well? That not only do we have to have a discussion if we're, you know, the manager or the exec hiring a millennial, but as a university professor, should I tell millennials that they need to give respect even before those boomers earn it? Or what should I say? How do I teach millennials differently then?
No, I think you're exactly right. I have my oldest child, my daughter, is also a university professor. We've had this conversation a number of times, and she definitely, even as a millennial, she tells her students, I am Dr. So-and-so or Professor so-and-so. I mean, that's just the way it is. But the key here, Terry, is to have the conversation about it with the new hire to say, listen, we're going to see things a bit differently. I'm 50 something, you're 20 something. So we're going to have different perspectives on life. Let me tell you what the boundaries are for me. Let me tell you what our expectations are in the workplace, the kind of people we are, what we value, how we do things. So as a university professor, then I would certainly say, until you hear differently, it's professor, it's doctor, because that's the respect that I've earned in my life and in my work, and it's the expectations I'll set inside the classroom. Now, let me explain why that's the case. And this is where you can really get together, because what you'll find is most people, regardless of generation, if you'll explain the why behind what you're asking or what your expectation is, we can get on the same page, even if I don't necessarily agree with you or have the same perspective. So if I explain that this is the way we want to do things and here's why, it really helps people get over that gap that exists. Whereas in my day, if I ask my dad, you know, he tells me to do something and I say, why? He says, because I said so. That's why. That's just really bad human psychology. People don't respond well to that. But that was the generation and the environment they grew up with. So they didn't, you know, they didn't change who they were. Today's leader, in order to be highly successful, has got to be adaptable to the change that's been created by different lifestyles and socio-cultural values and certainly technology.
So what you're saying then, Kelly, is if I'm the boomer manager, I should sit down with people I'm hiring and tell them my expectations, list them or discuss with the millennial those expectations, but also say why those are important to me. And if I'm the millennial listening, it is totally appropriate to ask the question, why, if my manager tells me expectations? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, you're going to get some pushback or some incredulity because a lot of millennials have never heard some things like that, the kinds of things that we would talk about as a boomer manager in the workplace. And they're going to say, well, I don't really understand that. I mean, it's always been dude and hey and everything. And that doesn't bother people. And so I sit down and say, I understand that, but let me explain where I'm coming from. And we tell the millennials, and you know, we're counseling on the other side, listen, it's always in your best interest to make your boss feel comfortable, to afford them that respect, to make them look good. Clearly, they can lose your respect by being an ineffective leader. But if that's the case, the wrong answer is to begin to fight back against that and decide you're not going to be that person because you don't like it. The correct answer is to have another conversation. And if you can't get on the same page, then to choose another path. But most millennials today have been taught that it's absolutely okay to voice my opinion and tell people what I think, regardless of their title or authority. I had one young millennial that I know very well say, you know, I don't have any problems calling out my boss in public. And I said, why? Why would you do that? I mean, set aside what you're comfortable with. Why would you intentionally want to correct your boss in public, knowing that the outcome is it's going to be embarrassing, it's going to create a problem with your relationship? I mean, why would you do that? He'd never been asked that question before.
Right. And what did he say? Tell us.
Well, he said, well, I mean, you know, I know what should be done and I know the correct answer. And so I'm just helping him and correcting him. I say that sounds fantastic in a one-on-one conversation when you've got trust in your relationship. But in an open forum with other people watching, actions have consequences, and you don't know what those consequences are going to be. I mean, we always told our kids growing up, listen, you don't have to tell everything you know. Right. And they would say, well, why do you say that? And say, well, because sometimes correcting someone may be pleasing to you personally, but it may create perception issues to the people around you. And if you're trying to create strong relationships, the last thing you want to do is embarrass someone.
Exactly. That's not good for the relationship. It may be good for you, but it's not good for the relationship or
right.
your boss.
Right.
So that's a really good example. I love that example that boomers and millennials value respect differently, and then how that translates into conflict in the workplace, and then a strategy about talking about expectations and the whys ahead of time. Can you give us another example of the differences in terms of either how millennials and boomers were raised and then how it translates, and maybe a strategy as well for listeners?
Absolutely. Let me switch gears. Let me put some onus on the boomer leader, because okay. One of the things we know about millennials for a fact from Gallup research and a lot of other sources is that one of the critical components to engaging millennials is to provide constant feedback. You know, they want to grow, they want to learn, they want to develop, and they need that feedback. They've been raised that way. The vast majority of time, they've always been told that they're doing well, and, you know, we're trying to prop up their self-esteem and all those kinds of things. So they come into the workplace and they have a boomer leader who, if they do an annual performance review once a year, it's a big deal. You know, they very rarely get that feedback. Right. So we counsel the boomer leader and we counsel the millennial when you're having this conversation about expectations, say, hey, is there a way for me to have a regular conversation with you in order to be the very best employee that I can be? I mean, I want to excel. I want to do well. And for me to do that, I want to make sure I'm not taking some missteps or I'm not missing something obvious. Is it possible to have a weekly or biweekly sit down for 10 or 15 minutes and just tell me what I need to do better, what I need to do to be the best employee that I can be? And when we say that to boomers, you know, their first reaction is, well, listen, I don't have time to babysit these kids and all that. So hang on a second. Do you want to create the very best possible work performance that you can? Yes. Well, then you need to adapt to some of the realities. And the reality is that the very best performance management tool on the planet inside the workforce is the face-to-face one-on-one meeting. And when employees can feel valued, they can feel like they're in on things, and they have an opportunity to get that prime feedback, it makes all the difference in the world in engagement. And engagement is the mother load. I mean, employee engagement impacts every financial metric that business leaders care about. That's why they should care about engagement.
Absolutely. And if you're thinking about this, as you've said, Kelly, as a relationship between two people, you've got the boss and you've got the worker. We know that relationships are more successful, they're happier, and both people are more involved or engaged, as you said, when they get regular affirmation and validation that they exist. If yes. I'm not noticed in a relationship as a worker or as a partner, or as a friend, as a child, then I don't value that relationship. I'm not happy in it. So if we're talking about a really good relationship, that regular sit down and getting that feedback and validation from my boss is so important. And as bosses, as boomer bosses, that's so important. I love that. Now, I mean, you mentioned two ideas about expectations at the beginning, and it made me think, do I do that before I get the job, or do I get the job and then sit down with my boss as a millennial and ask them about their expectations?
Well, that's a great question. The answer is yes.
you both. Then, right?
Yeah. I mean, because expectations can change over time. There can be a miscommunication about expectations. But when we're working with executive teams or hiring managers, we're always telling them, listen, you begin the expectation process. After you've done screening interviews and you begin to think, this could be a person I might offer a job, it's time to sit down and communicate expectations. What are they walking into? You know, what do you care about? What's important to you? What are your pet peeves? And what do you have an expectation for in terms of, you know, showing up at certain hours of the day? You know, one of the big disconnects with millennials is they cannot get over this idea that you have to be in your seat at 8 o'clock and you have to be there till 5 o'clock. I mean, after all, I can do more at Starbucks before 10 o'clock than you can do all day, you know, sitting in your office. Why is the metric how many hours I spend with my body in a chair? And so those are the kinds of things that we want to work on, talk out, and create those expectations. And that's going to continue through the tenure, because as they grow and mature, things will change, new expectations evolve. And we talk in the book at length, Terry, about creating a freedom box. And when someone starts, that freedom box is very constricting. You know, it's very small. But over the course of time, we want to define the boundaries, but we want to expand them as much as we possibly can to allow people to do their jobs without my input. Mm-hmm. That's a function of training, expectations, clear metrics, boundaries on authority, those kinds of things. But if you set those things in place, people can go out and flourish, and they really don't need you.
And you said freedom box, F-R-E-E-D-O-M? Freedom box. And is dress and how I should dress also an issue?
Absolutely. You know, it's so funny. We've seen the evolution of the dress code in the workplace from, 50 years ago, every man wore a suit, at the professional level. Every woman wore a dress at the professional level, or, something like that, dress and a skirt, something like that. Now, dress code is all over the board. So we can't take anything for granted in certain professions like banking, investment banking, that kind of thing. It's still very much expected that you will dress at the top level of the professional scale, three-piece suits or whatever the case may be. But a lot of organizations have brought it all the way down to just, jeans and a polo shirt or something of that nature. Those things you have to be very clear. I had a very interesting conversation with a client some time ago, and I asked them the question, do you have to have a dress code in your HR policy manual? He said, absolutely. I said, why? He said, well, if you don't, man, these kids will show up. They'll show up in tank tops and flip-flops and who knows what else. And I said, why? He said, well, because that's just what they'll do. I said, well, they wouldn't do that in my workforce. I said, I'm not trying to be arrogant. I'm just telling you, I would sit down and set the expectation. If you want to work here, and we'd love to have you, but these are the expectations that we have, a certain level of dress code. Mm-hmm. And my dress code was always professional dress, as befits the particular circumstance. He goes, well, who defines what that is? I said, I think most people have a fairly clear understanding. And if they don't, I'll make it clear for them. Not in a harsh, rule-driven way. I'm not trying to be legalistic. I want people to take pride in their organization and do it because they want to, not because they're following a list of rules.
Right. And rules are one thing, and putting them in a handbook is one thing. But what you're suggesting is that we really need to, again, express those expectations. And I always tell people in the workforce and at the university and business and in the university, here are my expectations. And if you don't meet those expectations, what happens? I just get frustrated, right? And yes. You don't want me to get frustrated as your boss. So we don't necessarily, you're saying, have to put them in a handbook. We need to put those expectations out there and have a discussion. Now, Kelly, we only have a few minutes left. Tell us about your book, Counter Mentor Leadership. And what does that mean, counter mentor leadership?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, my son and I, our relationship evolved to the point where if you were looking at a teeter-totter as a metaphor, it was all one-sided at first. He was always asking advice, but over time, that teeter-totter began to balance, and we began to think of this as sort of a counter-mentoring relationship. Typically the older mentors the younger, but there came a time where I was getting mentored by my son, and we developed this idea of counter mentoring. Jack Welch sort of popularized the idea of something he called reverse mentoring some years ago when he was at GE. He would pair senior leaders with younger employees and try to get them to work together. We thought reverse mentoring, good idea, but sort of incomplete in understanding what we wanted to accomplish. So we took this idea of counter mentoring and we developed a methodology in which we both took things that we had developed over time and created this 7-step methodology for training leaders that's encapsulated in the word counter, counter. And we took this and we created sort of this step-by-step approach to learning how to develop a very productive, results-driven workplace in which employees are engaged. And it's a very practical methodology. Nothing incredibly new there, but there's some really different applications of some things that I think we already know about leadership.
And is the book both for the boomer and the millennial? I mean,
absolutely.
Can both read it? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And what's the four generation? I mean, you say unlock the potential of the four generation workplace.
Well, you've got boomer and millennial. The lost generation, the generation in the middle is Gen X.
Yeah.
And Gen X was sort of the original young generation. But even they, right. Even my son, he's an older millennial. He's 31. He didn't get a smartphone until his late teens. Today's Generation Z, just now sort of entering the workplace, non-collegiate, they're entering the workplace. They generally were born after 98. So they'd be about 20 now. That could be the fourth generation. But actually, a fifth generation could theoretically be in the workplace because the generation before boomers, the oldest or the youngest rather, would be 72 years of age today. And with people retiring at a much higher age, you've got even the silent generation in there. So theoretically, you could have five generations.
Absolutely. What a great book. And I know that you give practical, actionable tips as well in the book. Thank you so much, Kelly. We're all out of time. Great discussion and great notion of thinking of the workplace as a relationship and boss and worker as a relationship and how to really have that happy, healthy, successful, productive relationship. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. What a pleasure to be on the show. Appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. And listeners, if you want to connect with Kelly Riggs, please go to his website or the website, countermentors.com. And again, his new book with his son, Robbie Riggs, is called Counter Mentor Leadership, How to Unlock the Potential of the Four-Generation Workplace. And as always, thanks for listening, everyone. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here always to help your relationships, all your relationships, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based advice that's easy to understand. So check out my website, Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com. And until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.